The Disciplined Investor is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges USD margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.59%. Of course, rates are subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The Fed's walking it back. No surprise here. New highs as the rally broadens out. Coins collapse over the weekend. Where is the bottom? And a quick mid-year update. All this and much more on episode number 720 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. How you doing? Bring back my New York twang. How you doing out there? Hey, it's Andrew Horowitz. Well, it's been an exciting time of late, hasn't it been? We're seeing some pretty broad-based rally in the market. We're seeing that there's a lot more going on with regard to, stocks and announcements and things that are happening there. Yes, of course, we have a good bit of the Fed and a good bit of stimulus and the announcement that there's a bipartisan agreement. And then another announcement that the Dems are going to shove it down the throat of the Republicans in a reconciliation deal for a, what are they calling it? Human infrastructure. I think it's human. Is that the right one? I think it's human infrastructure. That's what they're utilizing the next round of stimulus. That's what they're calling it. We got infrastructure for bridges and trains and roads and transportation and buildings and internet. And then we have human infrastructure, which I think just means a fancy way of saying we're giving out a lot of money to a lot of people. I mean, we're talking about in the multiple trillions of dollars. It looks like there could be a little bit of a hang-up on there, the way this was all put forth by the parties that be. But yes, listen, we are seeing a bit of a change from where we were the week before. Last week was an actually good week for the market, a really nice rally, very broad-based, and that was on the heels of a very concerned market, an investor that was pretty much just pulling out. Remember, the Fed, you know, what did they do at their official meeting? They spent some time talking more hawkishly. They raised some technical rates in the background and essentially drew liquidity out of the system. That's what they did. They were hedging. It's the first time Powell has really done that since the start of the last dovish shift back last year, where we were going to have low interest rates till 2023 and $120 billion of monthly purchases of various bonds that were going to be going on. And, you know, we're going to stay as long as we need to be in this emergency setting. We're going to be here. And that was meeting in and meeting out. And even as we saw the signs that things were healing and that the economy was getting much better and that, well, employment was getting a lot better than it was. And on the heels of all this, some inflation, dare I say, sneaking into the system. He was absolute. Couldn't move him. You know, until we get this employment situation done, we are going to be just where we are now, and we are going to hold the line. We're going to make sure that we have plenty of liquidity in the system, and we are going to make sure that we have low interest rates and do everything in our power. Now, this particular meeting on that Wednesday sounded very different. And that is where things got interesting. Because a few days later, on Friday, we saw that Bullard came out, another FOMC member, and this is 2 days after this, right? Markets are getting a little skittish. On Friday, so Wednesday was the rate decision, Wednesday was the Powell test of the press conference commentary. Definitely a little more hawkish. Then Bullard comes out just a few days after this and reconfirmed the more hawkish view. In fact, he even used the word hawkish in his interview. I mean, whoa, hang on. These are things you just don't say. You don't say that Powell is a little more hawkish. That's, you know what that's like? I can only say it's like yelling fire in a crowded theater. And what happens when you do that? Well, you get a stampede of people trying to get out. They're running over each other, getting to the doors and saying, get out of my way. I am not going to be the last person here getting burnt to a crisp by the fire. Well, the same thing happened with the markets. Once we saw that word come out, and more so the confirmation of multiple Fed officials that this hawkish stance was actually something to really be recognized right now, and maybe, wow, are they going to really move forward a lot faster than they anticipated initially? Well, people started running out, jumping over each other to sell, to get out of the markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average and the markets plunged on those comments. And we just saw a 500 or close to 550 point day on the Dow Jones in the last couple days before that weren't so good either. So here we are in a situation where they're yelling fire in a crowded movie theater. When I say crowded, we're talking about a crowded trade in equities where there has been a lot of leverage that is put on throughout the last year as liquidity's been there and as the Fed and the governments around the world and central banks have been very absolute and they have been, I would say, unchangeable in their views, thereby giving the green light. But then just a couple of days later, not to let that fire really get out of control. And it's just like when firefighters come back to the theater and say, hey, you know what? Wait. All clear. Maybe it's a false alarm. What happens? People funnel back into that theater. Well, on Monday, starting the few days later, last week, Monday, the Fed parade started. Think of them like the firefighters going out and saying, hey, it's okay. It's good. Don't worry. We're still going to be keeping rates down, calming everybody. And what happened is the money moved back into the markets, just like the theater goers moved back into the theater. Pretty much as simple as that. I mean, let's not get more complicated and heady about this whole thing. The fact is that right now, where we are, the Fed is in control. You wonder why we talk about this so much. And some people are like, oh, God, there's Horowitz talking about the Fed again. What's the matter? Because this is an important aspect of where we are in the financial system right now. When investing, we have to understand what is the backdrop. The backdrop right now is very simple. We have tons of liquidity. We have central banks around the world that are extremely accommodative, bending over backwards, going towards negative interest rates. We have governments that are issuing money to people like it's, well, water or even, air. And what we're also seeing is that there's a confirmation and a commitment that they'll continue to do this for some time so that we are not worried or caught flat-footed. So this is intriguing times and times you need to understand what is happening because that as the backdrop or as the base, we'll call it the base, is a way that you need to look at things when you are considering where we are in the cycle and how things play out. So what the Fed is doing right now is something that we all need to pay attention to because they're in control. They're testing the waters. They're sending up trial balloons to see just how far that they can, I guess, push and prod the markets before they go too far and markets freak out to a point they can't pull them back. And last week they were successful in pulling them all back. You know, the funny thing is that, do you remember the taper tantrum back in 2013? That was after the financial crisis when they were doing quantitative easing. a lower level than they're doing now, by the way. I think it was $80 billion per month back then at the peak. And they talked about pulling back, tapering. The word was tapering. They got to come up with fancy words. You know, this was tapering. And what happened was that with regard to the tapering, the market said, hey, Powell, or it wasn't Powell at the time. I'm sorry. Hey, central bank. It was Bernanke at the time, I believe. Was it Bernanke in 13? I think it was Bernanke. You know what? Screw you. We are not going to put up with this. And interest rates rose and equity markets dove. And what happened there was the markets were going to show the central bank how to play. They just ramped up rates. They crushed stocks. It was a signal. And then what happened? Well, the Fed stepped back in. Oh, no, we're not going to do it that fast. Don't worry about it. It's not going to be as bad as you consider. Again, they walked it back. And since then, while it's really kind of childish, it's kind of elegant. It's a game being played by both sides. To a degree, a game of chicken, where we're going to see how far we can go till the other one balks, till there is a flinch. And right now, it's a Mexican standoff, right? You have one side is not budging. The other side's not budging. Markets are going to say, hey, you take it down, we're going to take down markets. Or if you're going to tighten, we're going to take down markets. The Fed says, okay, well, we're going to tighten. But then if the markets come down, we're not going to do that. So this is equilibrium that's actually there right now, because that's how we got to a point of having excessive valuations that finally earnings are starting to come in and look better to a point that, and very good earnings, by the way. So, but to a point that earnings have caught up to some of the valuation moves that we saw that was so extended, but still extremely rich when you compare historical levels. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, well, we have a very easy monetary policy. And to top that off, we even have a green light last week that the Fed gave. Thumbs up, two thumbs up, maybe two thumbs up and two big toes up. Double green lights flashing that all the banks passed the stress test with incredible amount of space. So what's going to happen with that? Well, there's going to be some big announcements I would expect next week. We'll see all the major banks come out with talking about higher dividends and share buyback plans and all that. So that's going to be good timing because we're right in the middle of a lull. We're in the middle of a time when the Fed talked about, well, they're going to be raising, well, you know, possibly raising rates in the face of inflation, but maybe not. Banks started rolling over pretty hard after a glorious rally since the beginning of the year, one of the best sectors of the year, and then just fell off a cliff. And here we are right in a period right between where banks are starting to roll over and 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now where we're going to start to see that earnings are going to be announced by the majors. And then they'll start rolling in the rest of them. So this is on the heels of about a 10% drop that we saw, by the way, from the key banking index over the past couple of weeks. Good timing. Into earnings, we have a lot of potential for the opportunity for banks to say, hey, you know what? Our trading is doing this and we're seeing the M&A fees doing that, but we still have these great buybacks. So they may do some buybacks and then even announce further buybacks, I would expect, as their earnings numbers come out. And if there is any disappointment in any of the earnings numbers, maybe they're not showing the same kind of growth, the extraordinary exponential growth they saw over the last couple of years between the trading and their issuance of bond securities, their M&A, their work in the area of IPOs, et cetera. Well, if that's not going to be as exciting, they may have this new wrinkle where they can throw out that they're going to be buying back some shares. So I'd expect next week maybe some dividend news to come out, maybe a little bit of buyback news, possibly, but I think they may be also holding back for some of the earnings numbers so that they can soften the blow if there are any problems with earnings. Now let's segue just for a moment into crypto land. Why don't we? The coins. I don't know. It seemed like the weekends have been extraordinarily tough on the coins. I mean, ever since China put the kibosh on mining and started throwing out people and saying, hey, you know what? We're not going to be allowing any of this business to go on. And we're really not loving this whole coin thing. That's on the heels, of course, of India and other countries being questioned. Of course, El Salvador utilizing it as national currency. That's a small country. Who cares, really? Doesn't excite me. But what we saw was some very significant downside over the last few weeks. In fact, Bitcoin actually turned negative. Negative for the year after being up more than 70% at one point. And that's with all the pumpers. You know, the coin barkers. Who have become so annoying. Can I just say something? I am so aggravated and annoyed by the constant barking and pumping of coins, of Bitcoin and of the currency and of cryptocurrencies. I'm just not clear why there needs to be hourly reminders if this is such a great investment. I mean, if it's such a great investment, why do we need so much pump? Yeah, I do think it's a great, it's an interesting investment vehicle, trading vehicle. And I think there's some merit to that, especially for the majors, where it's pretty liquid, but it's all become, it's deafening and somewhat, I guess, off-putting is the best way I could. It's off-putting. The amount of energy these evangelists or these Bitcoin maximalists are putting into their megaphones, it's like, oh, I just want the batteries to stop. It's incredible. And they say, Andrew, whoa, chill out, dude. You know, turn off. Problem is, it's hard to get around. It's everywhere these days. And I was thinking that maybe if we didn't have all these shills, that the price would be actually less volatile. Have you ever thought of that? I, for one, would welcome less volatility. Because I think it to a point degrades the potential and the quality potential of the investment. And yes, before you're going to start throwing lettuce at me here, you need to know I hold some coins. But I feel I need to be realistic about the asset class. I want to go down a whole rabbit hole on this, but I just want to mention that, you know, we're seeing some real problems in that area, and that was supposed to be a diversifier. That was supposed to be an inflation hedge. If that was supposed to be anything other than an investment vehicle, I don't really understand. And you say, Andrew, because, well, you're an old timer. I'm not an old timer. But I've been around the block on this kind of thing before. May not be exactly the same. I'm not calling it a beanie baby, although it has some of those elements. Many of the smaller coins out there have some of those elements particularly. But some of this is also a little bit too much when you consider that an investment that is a quality investment could stand on its own without the constant need to remind people of how good it is. Like me saying, oh, you know, if I go out there and I'm, you know, look at me. I'm so good looking and tall and rich and people love me. And why would I do something like that all the time? Insecurity? Have people believe something that's not actually true, maybe? Some kind of mind game I'm playing with myself? Some kind of pump and influence that I'm trying to do on others? Maybe they're like, yeah. Finally, they agree with me. Meanwhile, I'm short and fat and ugly, right? So did that really play out? I don't know. The bottom line is that the move by China, by kicking them out, and it's causing a storm. It's causing dirt to be kind of dredged up and clouding the entire environment. It's going to cause some problems, no question. But until the miners get settled again, that's where we're going to have this big problem. Now, what's going on over the weekend? It could be a liquidity issue. The institutions are not involved, possibly. I don't know. It just seems like something weird is going on the weekends, and all of a sudden we start picking up again Sunday night into Monday. But until then, until we get some kind of settling down by this whole miners, possibly the regulation by the SEC clarified by Garrett Gensler and what's going to happen there, if anything. And I think the problem we're having right now is that when you see things like $3.6 billion of Bitcoin is gone due to, I think it was in Brazil, two brothers are disappeared, it doesn't provide confidence. When's the last time you heard of a bank robbery? I mean, a straight-up bank robbery. Like, owners of the two-stage bank company can no longer be found, and all the cash is missing, as well as everything in the safety deposit boxes. You don't hear that. But you do hear that about the coins and the wallets being stolen and unrecoverable. Some of the exchanges being fraudulent, or people just running away with the money. So, sorry, there are still some kinks in the process. And like I said, I do think it's a pretty interesting investment trading vehicle, the whole store of cash and all that. It's going to take a while for me to really understand that as a benefit. What I also want to do is a mid-year checkup of the key indices and trends, which reminds me, I've been thinking back of all the things we talked about this year. I want to say thank you to all the wonderful, and thank you for all the wonderful reviews and listeners that are providing those on all the various podcasting sites. I mean, you know, we're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Amazon Podcasts, and the list goes on and on and on, right? And all the other major podcast directories. Thank you so much for all the great comments. You know, it takes a lot of work to put together a weekly show, whether or not we have a guest on it, whether or not we're doing topics, whether or not it's educational, or even like this week where we're kind of like doing a little bit of a review on a mid-year basis of what's happening. It takes a lot of work to put that together. It takes a team. It takes time. And I want to thank you for all the comments that you provided. And you can also send me your thoughts, your ideas, your criticisms. You can simply go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew button, and comment away, type away. Let me hear what you're thinking. I do appreciate them, and I do read them all. And I do reply usually as well. I also want to ask you a question, and if you're, well, this is obvious. I think pretty obvious at least. Are you looking for ways to earn extra income? You know, Interactive Brokers has been a great supporter of the show, and they have something called the Stock Yield Enhancement Program, which lets you earn extra income on fully paid shares of stock in your brokerage account. And here's basically how it works. Interactive Brokers will lend your shares to traders who pay an interest rate to borrow them. And you, as the owner of those shares, are going to receive 50% of the earned income. It's that simple. All you have to do is open an Interactive Brokers account today and start earning extra income. You can learn more at ibkr.com/SYEP. I mean, who else? Who out there doesn't want to earn extra money for not doing anything? Isn't that like the mecca of all things, right? Just have your money working for you and you earning money while not doing anything? Kind of like, you know, I make money while I sleep. Check out Interactive Brokers at ibkr.com/SYEP. Now, let's get to this mid-year update. It's not quite the end of the year yet. The month or the semi or the quarter, but we're close. We're getting close. A couple more days left. We're going to have July right upon us here. July 4th coming right around the corner. Hopefully that's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully we'll see fireworks this year. We missed those last year, right? They were banned. That's going to be fun. Anyway, this mid-year update. So not quite there yet. So, but this I think we can put things in perspective. We're going to use indices and ETFs to create this kind of picture of where things are, where the trends are, and how things look right now. And we're going to start with a couple different areas. I want to start with Europe first. It's interesting. Europe has had a lot of problems with the virus, and we've seen all sorts of issues with related to their economies. We've seen, of course, Brexit this year coming fully out again. We're seeing that, kind of continuing on the process. We're seeing that there's been just, lockdowns that have persisted in some areas. We're seeing that. But meanwhile, it's like nothing's happening in terms of business. Things are good. In fact, a lot of areas in the European region are beating the U.S. And you have to scratch your head a little bit about that and wonder, how is profitability so good in that, right? Well, again, it's back to what we talked about in the beginning. The incredible amount of liquidity that's being put out there, fiscal stimulus and monetary stimulus, is basically shoving money into the profits of companies and individuals, for that matter, which are then giving it back to the companies. That's the plan. That's the plan. So let's go through some of this here and talk a little bit about the winners, the real winners, and the areas of, so far, year to date, where we are. Norway up 18.4% and Sweden up 18% as well. And the Netherlands up 18% as well. Kind of down on the other end of the spectrum, we have Spain up 8.5%. We have Portugal up 3%. Germany is 10%. The European financials up 15% this year. So you're getting the picture, right? The whole point here is that things are going along pretty swimmingly well in Europe. Now, we did have one of the things that was really beneficial for some time up until this year was a dollar that was declining. A dollar declining when you utilize the ETFs and you have the dollar decline against the other currency, and the currency moves up, whether it's the euro or any particular currency here. For other countries that we're talking about, well, that is a benefit and a driver of overall performance inside that ETF, because the shares are priced in the local currency. The ETF is essentially priced in the local currency. Yes, you can buy it and sell it with dollars. But when you look at, for example, the Euro Financial ETF, well, we know that part of the performance is based on the currency exchange. They don't hedge. It's in local. If the dollar moves higher against them, you're going to have a degradation of overall performance. And if the dollar moves down, you're going to get a driver of or benefit to performance inside of that ETF. Well, this year, I believe the dollar index is up about 2% overall, stronger, firmer than it had been over the last year or so. So that's really not helping, nor it's not really hurting either right now. A couple of percent here or there. But, you were seeing that the trend in Europe is pretty good. We think that Europe had and does have a better risk-reward proposition than many of the stocks and indices here in the U.S., as we've seen them get over their skis a little bit in terms of valuation. So we have a pretty good position of European equities in our global allocations as well as Investology. I talked about the whole rotation. I talked about sector allocation over the last several weeks. And one of the things I talked about was looking at doing a rebalance, looking at risk tolerance, looking at where you are, making sure that you are in the right overall risk level, the right portfolio, the right balance, the right asset allocation, the right sector allocation for where you should be at this time of your life, for where you want to be, where it's the most suitable for your portfolio, whatever that particularly is. But I said what we need to do is continually rebalance. And if you did so, you would see that we're taking money out of the higher performers, US over the last year, and into things like Europe, emerging markets, et cetera. Now, when we look at emerging markets, by the way, and we look at that particular area of the markets, well, lo and behold, they're doing pretty darn well as well. Some of the laggards we're going to start with first, like the Philippines, down about 4% year to date, Malaysia down 9%, and Turkey, that has a lot to do with the currency in this one, down 19.5%. South Africa, which is having a very harsh lockdown and big problem with the coronavirus, And of course, they even, you know, stopped cigarette sales and alcohol sales, still up 13% for the year. China, the CSI 300, only up 1.7. The emerging market area, another area that I said, hey, I think there is some excellent value in this, is up 7.5%. Russia, a lot of oil-related move here, up 21% for the year. Taiwan, all the semis, up 19% for the year. Canada, up 22% for the year? Wow. What's going on up in Canada? Of course, Canada, we know, has a lot of natural resources. So you got to think like that. Why would Canada be doing well? Well, it's not because of their beautiful beaches and their pull of their restaurants and their hotels on the warm beaches. No, that's not it. It's because they have an incredible amount of industry that is based on commodities, natural resources. And as such, when we see that we are having lumber prices go through the roof and copper and various materials, as well as things like gold that is done, you know, okay, a little bit of a downtrend now, but done well, and silver and copper and palladium and platinum, and oil sands of Canada, of course. Well, that is a really big push to that region's indice that is heavy in those areas, and that ETF, EWC, benefits from that. Been a great year for the reflation trade. It's been a great year for energy and for materials. I don't think anybody can say otherwise, and that is a big part of Canada's index. Hong Kong, even with all the trouble and the shutdown of the Apple Daily, up 9.7% for the year. Brazil, here's something really kind of fascinating, probably due to the fact of Petrobras and a couple other things, or, you know, maybe their oil exposure. Bet without that, this would be horrendous. Up 10%. But man, they're having a tough time down there. You know, between the anti-vaxxers, between the anti-coronavirus whole mode of their government. Belisarius? No. Anyway, I feel like an idiot. Anyway, the president of Brazil, and, you know, you look at that and you say, well, with all that's going on, how is it still up 10%? And again, it's probably because of the oil exposure they have there. Japan up just about 1.27%. So all in all, we're seeing that emerging markets generally doing well. I mean, with Mexico up 12% and India up 16%, even with all their problems. Again, a testament to the idea of diversification. Because if you would have said something like, hey, you know, I think that, boy, it's probably a terrible thing to be invested in Canada for whatever reason, or India, you may have missed out on some of these returns that are actually better than some of the core returns in the U.S. I mean, the Russell 1000, the large cap, is up 14% for the year. The Russell 2000 is up 18% for the year. There are better performing sectors, areas, countries, regions in the world that if you had in your portfolio could have actually given you a little bump. So the idea, we've talked about this with Meb Faber a few times, you know, this home country bias. The idea that, well, I'm going to have all my money in my country. Why is that? I don't know. I'm a Florida Panthers fan. I'm a Dolphin fan. Well, why is that? Well, because I live in Florida. Yeah, but is that the fan you should be? Maybe there's a better team out there. Well, that's kind of hard to do. You'll be fighting upstream on that one. But when it comes to investing, this home country bias, which we often have as a natural phenomenon when we invest, we know it better, we understand it better, and everything else is over there. I don't know what's going on over there. And when I don't understand what's happening, or I don't know what's happening, or at least feel that, I feel kind of like, well, I don't know what's happening in Kazakhstan or Russia or in Egypt, or I don't know what's going on in Brazil really that much. Well, that creates a problem, because then we are not confident about putting our money to work there. And that's why the whole concept of diversification is so important. That's why I've been banging it. Bang, 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 bang. So I've been talking about it. So this kind of just, even though it wasn't going there with this discussion, that's exactly the point in real life. IRL, folks, that's what it's all about. So when we look at the split of where things are happening here in the U.S., kind of a different flavor of what's going on. Things are catching up in certain areas, but look, we know the large cap up, 14%, small cap up 18%, but inside of that is what's really interesting as well, because the growth side, technology healthcare, is up 11% on the large cap, where the value side is up 16%. Now, that has caught up a lot. Last few weeks, there's been a big rotation back to growth. We're seeing the Russell 2000, the small cap value side, financials, energy, up 28% this year, where the growth side is up 8.91%. Bonds are generally down for the year, flat to down, depending on the maturity, international, dollar denominated or not. TIPS, junk bonds, slightly higher for the year so far. Silver and gold, both down for the year. U.S. dollars up 2%. So generally, the uptrend for equities is intact. I think we could all agree. I think we could all agree with that, right? Generally speaking, the uptrend for equities is intact. But one of the things that I looked at just today, again, because I always want to peek at this. I think it's really important metric on the markets to understand where are we, what is really the participation that's going into making the performance for any given time. And as I mentioned, that probably what we're seeing in Canada is why that index is up. Well, what's really working to provide the performance underlying U.S. equity performance or bond performance? And one thing that I like to look at just from a broad-based view is where is the market in terms of the participation of equities? And I can look at the S&P Equal Weighted Index and the S&P Cap Weighted Index, the one that we look at all the time when I talk about the S&P, when you see it on TV, when you read about it, it's always the Cap Weighted Index. Cap Weighted Index. That's the standard. The larger stocks in terms of market capitalization, the size of the company itself is the most important when it comes to the S&P market cap. So you have the names like Apple, of course, and Google and Microsoft, and the names that you know are really going to provide the performance pump. In the S&P equal weighted, every stock in the S&P is equally weighted. It's that simple, right? Equally weighted. Well, what's interesting right now is the S&P 500 equal weight is beating the S&P 500 cap weight. So what does that mean? Because it is something important to me, at least, and for now. And I think what it means and what we should take from that is that the rally is broad-based. It's not just concentrated in the top stocks. It means that the smaller names are actually providing a major performance boost for the stocks inside of the S&P 500. And I really think it's an important point to consider, because if we look at this in reverse, in opposite, well, if I was to say the opposite of what I just talked about, I would be concerned that there's a flight to safety into the larger cap stocks out there. And that would tell me that the rally is narrowing, or it's very concentrated, which means that underlying all this really isn't holding up very well. Think of a sinkhole. You have the top of the street that's very, very firm, but underneath it, there's a massive hole that we could find a very easy collapse to fall into. And when we see that that is the case, I think, well, some of the risk is coming out of the market. We're moving into safer zones in the market. So now, as we know that that's not the case, you can say, well, we have a broad-based rally where there is a tremendous amount of interest in all sorts of names. And what's interesting on that note, I think, is that we have to question, well, is there too much interest? Is there too much interest? Because have you noticed that when stocks come out and companies come out with their earnings or other news about something that kind of disappoints pretty hard the markets, right? There's a real market sells them off, and especially due to earnings, companies taking their lumps, moving down pretty hard. Then they base out for a couple of weeks. The price just kind of stabilizes. Then immediately buyers start finding interest again, pushing up the stock price. And that name, that stock price, is ends up above where it was before earnings, before that disappointment, before we even see another earnings print happening within a three-month period. And yeah, we know, I think we all agree that there's a lack of fundamental research that's being done at this point, right? I mean, we know that in this point of the cycle. And where are we? We're kind of in the later innings. We're toward the peak of the cycle, and that is showing up in the sectors that we talked about and we're going to talk about. Because when we look at the sectors and we see that the greatest performers are things that are interest sensitive and home builders and materials, energy up 46%, financials up 25%, home builders up 25%, staples only up 3%, utilities up 2%, tech up 11%, consumer discretionary up 10%. And that's below the 14% average of where the S&P is. So all those names that are above or below are telling us a little bit about where we are in the cycle. And again, we're in the latter part of this cycle. We're towards the end. That doesn't mean, let's just listen. That doesn't mean it's all over. I'm about to see this wash away of everything, right? And I get this question a lot. It was kind of like, you know, are we too high? Are the markets too high? I was out this week with dinner with some friends. And my pal who, I guess I got to say that he's a really good businessman. Very smart. Very successful. But for whatever reason, when I'm with him, we don't really talk about markets. We don't talk about stocks. We don't talk about things like that. For whatever reason, I don't know why. But this week, he led the discussion with, hey, Andrew, don't you think markets are overvalued? Do you think this is all artificial? I said, yeah. There are some areas that are overdone. There are some areas that are overvalued, expensive, and there's some areas that are not. That's always or usually what we see. Oftentimes we see that there are areas of the market that are overdone and some that are underdone, right? Overvalued, undervalued. Artificial? Yeah, I'll go with it. But what does that mean anyway? I mean, we got artificial sweeteners. We use those. They're still sweet. They do the job. Got artificial reefs. Beautiful. You dive on them. I've dove on them. Fish love it. Plants grow on it. Get artificial turf. I mean, you get where I'm going with this, right? Just because we're in a Fed-induced fiscal stimulus-pumped environment doesn't mean you can't participate and get the upside opportunity of making money in this kind of environment. I think that we have to know what game we're playing. We have to know where we are in the cycle. And then look at these sectors, it's very clear. So we know where we're in the cycle. Use your best judgment on where you find the right place to be. Find an advisor to help you with this. We're in the late stage and getting towards a tightening moment. Not immediately. And the truth is, and where we are now could last a really long time. We could be in this part of the cycle for a while. And as long as the spigot is open with stimulus and liquidity, who says it can't last a good bit longer? And who says that it's wrong? Who says you can't participate? Who says that you need to be sitting on the sidelines? So when I told him all of that, he's like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. But I still think things are overvalued. I'm like, okay, all right, forget it. Okay. Your beliefs are your beliefs. Beliefs are your beliefs. But the fact is that, I mean, listen, the reality of all this is we know at this point, nobody's surprised to know we are in the late stage of this cycle, or at least the late stage of where the fiscal stimulus is and where the monetary stimulus is and where we are in terms of inflation. PCI numbers came in at 3.4% year over year last week. Pretty hot, but yet exactly, interesting, exactly where the Fed said they were going to be. Who would have thought? So there you have it. Hey, we're going to wrap it up this week. Summertime is here. I want to thank everybody for joining me and let you know that, of course, we'll be here again next week. Next week is July 4th. Hey, awesome. Hey, send me your pictures. Love to see what you're doing with your family on the 4th of July. If you can remember to do so, go over to the site. There's plenty of information on how to get in touch with me over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thanks so much, and I'll see you again next week.
Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.
Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.